One of the experiences I had was because England is 5 hours ahead. So he passed away on Hanukkah in England, but I was over here, so it wasn't Hanukkah yet. So when I found out he passed away, it was about maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And right away, the halacha is that when a person, God forbid, loses a close relative, they right away descend into a halachic state called an onen. An avel is a mourner during the 7 days of avelus, of mourning. But right upon the passing of a close relative, up until the burial, that's called like an intense bereavement period. And the legal term for that is called an onen. So a person becomes an onen, not an avel, but an onen from the moment of the passing away until the burial. And one of the halachas about an onen is that an onen is exempt from mitzvahs. So important it is at that in that time period to see to the needs of the burial, and also because of just the intensity of the loss of the relative. So the halacha exempts such an individual from performing positive commandments. Of course, a person has to still observe the negative commandments or not violate negative commandments, but positive commandments an onen is exempt from. So, for instance, with myself, it was interesting. I was giving a class at 12:30 lunchtime at Eitz Chaim in Center City, and it was a lunch and learn. So I'd already washed for bread for what I was eating before the class began. And then I went into the other room to give the class. And then normally what I would do is after the class was over, I'd continue eating by myself in my office and then bench afterwards. So after the class, right away, I got a phone call from my brother to say that my father had passed away. So at that moment, I became an onen. And therefore, if I was an onen, I was exempt from benching. So I didn't bench. I didn't do the grace after meals. That's the halacha. Another halacha which was relevant was davening mincha. So I was exempt from mincha. And also for Maariv as well until the burial the next day. But another halacha, which at least I thought I was exempt from, was lighting the Hanukkah menorah, because that's also a positive commandment. It's even a rabbinic commandment. So certainly I would be exempt from that as well as an onen. So I thought I was exempt. Practically speaking, I couldn't do it anyway because right away I had to book a flight and I had to fly to England very quickly. So there was no opportunity. I wasn't going to light a menorah inside the plane. So I was anyway practically unable to do the mitzvah anyway. But at least in my mind, I thought that I was exempt from the mitzvah because I was an onen. And that's what I thought for many, 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 many years until this year. And I was learning Hilchos Chanukah a few weeks ago. And the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that if a person becomes an onen and he's not traveling anywhere and he has his family nearby, so he is exempt from lighting the menorah, technically speaking. However, he really should light it anyway. He should light it anyway without a bracha, without the brachas. And why? Because of the concept of Pirsumei Nisa, of publicizing the miracle. And if I was around, therefore, I would have had to have lit the menorah, not for myself, so to speak, but for other people because of Pirsumei Nisa, because of publicizing the miracle. And that was really a chiddush to me. It was very surprising. I never knew that before because I always thought I was exempt completely. But an onen is still obligated to light the menorah in order to fulfill the other concept of Pirsumei Nisa. And this really brings our attention to essentially two aspects of Chanukah, two aspects of the Chanukah mitzvah of lighting the menorah. One is for ourselves to light the menorah in order to show our gratitude and our appreciation and of to Hashem for the miracles which happened. And that's the mitzvah of my lighting of the menorah. But there's also this added dimension of lighting the menorah to provide Pirsumei Nisa, publicizing of the miracle to everybody around me as well. And therefore, even if I'm not really obligated myself vis-a-vis my own personal obligation, I'm still obligated to satisfy the needs of other people that they should have pursuit or that there should be Pirsumei Nisa. I don't know if it's necessary to satisfy their needs. Whatever it means exactly, I'm going to perhaps go into another explanation as we go further along, but it's described as Pirsumei, to publicize the miracle. I still have to publicize the miracle. So that was a chiddush to me this year. Another halacha over here, I'm looking at the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mi shelo hidlik ve'ena osid lahadlik." Someone who did not light, not because he's a no name, because of circumstantial reasons. Maybe he's traveling, like on a plane. So let's say someone didn't light, ve'ena osid lahadlik, and he's not able to light that night whatsoever for circumstantial reasons. Nobody's lighting for him inside of his house. So he has nobody lighting for him. He's not lighting himself. He's not going to light. So he's going to miss completely that night of Chanukah, of no lighting of the menorah. The Shulchan Aruch says, Kishiroa ner Chanukah, when he sees a ner Chanukah, when he sees someone else's menorah, Mevarech Sha'asanisim, he makes the brachas of Sha'asanisim. He makes the brachas on seeing. He doesn't make the bracha Lahad Lignesh al Chanukah, because that's the bracha for lighting the Ner Chanukah. But he does make the bracha of seeing the of Ner Chanukah, Sha'asanisim. And if it's the first night, he makes a Shehachiyanu. So he still has to make a bracha on seeing the Ner Chanukah, even though he's not doing the mitzvah of lighting the Ner Chanukah. A little bit similar to the case before with the Onein. And the Mishnah Berurah says the reason why is because Tzarech Levarech al Ari has to make a bracha on the seeing of the Ner Chanukah, Lahodos, to give gratitude for the miracle, to say thank you to Hashem for the miracle which happened. So we see again this almost double dimension of the Ner Chanukah, the lighting of the menorah, and then the seeing, the looking at, the seeing. And here the Mishnah Berurah is explaining that the concept of seeing it, or the thrust for making the brachas and for lighting, or so to make these brachas on seeing the menorah, is in order that you should give gratitude to Hashem for the miracles which happened. So, two examples of how seeing the menorah is unto itself like a very chashuv thing. It's a very special thing to see the menorah, to see the light of the menorah, to produce light for the menorah, for people around you, for Pesumei Nisa, for you to make a brachot when you see it. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that's the halacha. So I saw something in the parasha this week, which is really a very, very beautiful insight, which perhaps gives us a little bit more of a deeper understanding of this idea of looking at the Ner Chanukah and why it's so important to look at the lights of the Ner Chanukah. Aside from giving gratitude, aside from giving hodah, and aside from publicizing the miracle, another dimension. So it's connected to the parasha. So in the text which I sent out, it says, I put myself on the line. I said, the class today is going to be on Chanukah and the parasha. The truth is, when I sent that text, I had the foggiest idea of how to connect Chanukah to the parasha. So I had a big responsibility. So Baruch Hashem, I saw in one of my Sfarim over here, the Shvilei Pinchas, where he elaborates, and really it's fascinating, about a connection to the parasha and Chanukah. And he takes this from one of the classic commentaries at the back of the Gemara, Shilti Geborim. So this is a classic commentary. It's quoted by the Elul Rabba. If you're not familiar with these names, these are the big guns in Halacha, in the Rishonim, in the Achronim. These are the main commentaries. So the Shilti Geborim, where it comes from, has this very short comment at the back of Mesechta Shabbos, talking about Chanukah, and he says, this is parasha, Miketz, which is the parasha that most years Chanukah falls out to be on. Sometimes it falls out in parashas Vayeshev. Most years, Chanukah always coincides with parashas Miketz. So very, very briefly, what is happening in parashas Miketz? This is the continuation of the story of Yosef and his brothers. All of the brothers are now gathered together in the court of Paro with Yosef. And Yosef has them all there. He hasn't revealed himself to the brothers yet. And the Pasuk says that, this is before he reveals himself to the brothers. The Pasuk says, this is, if you want to take a look, this is in chapter 23, verse 16. And it says that the Yar Yosef Itam, and Yosef saw Binyamin together with the other brothers. And of course, we know that Binyamin is his full brother, so he was particularly moved upon seeing Binyamin. And Yosef saw Binyamin standing there with the brothers, Vayoma la'ashel beso, and he said to the one who was over his household, referring to Menasseh, he was his kind of right-hand man in the palace. He said to the one over his household, Menasseh, bring these men, bring them into the house, bring them into the house. Utavoach tevach v'hochein, and slaughter and prepare and slaughter something and prepare, make a meal for them. Ki iti yochlu anoshim betzoram, because with me these men are going to eat in the afternoon. We're going to eat a meal together. prepare a meal for them. Prepare a meal for them. So the Shilta Gibora says, hinted to in these words over here is Hanukkah. Hanukkah is hinted to over here. How so? Because in this phrase over here, Tevach v'hochein, slaughter and prepare. If you take these letters, Tevach v'hochein, if you have a chumash and you're looking at it, it's much more, you know, much more effective. But the word Tevach is spelled Tet, Tes Beis Ches, Tes Beis Ches. If you take the last letter of Ches and combine that with the second word V'hochein, those letters V'hochein and prepare. If you jumble those letters around and combine it with the Ches of the word Tevach, you get the word Hanukkah. So Hanukkah is embedded in these two words. Not the entire two words, Tevach, only the Ches of Tevach combined with the next word V'hochein spells the word Hanukkah. Now, when I saw this originally, I thought, okay, you know, it's, you know, God forbid to say, I wasn't initially so moved by it. It seemed like a little bit of a, I don't want to say the words because that's my first reaction was somewhat, you know, okay, until I saw that it was quoted by the Shilta Gibora, such a classic commentator. So clearly it's something which is very, very important. So it's alluded to, right? The word Hanukkah is alluded to in that you see those letters of Hanukkah in those two words. Prepare a meal, and therefore Hanukkah is there. So the truth is that the halacha quotes this as being a potential source for the obligation to have a su'udah on Hanukkah. So this is an interesting question. We have an obligation having a su'udah on Shabbos, a su'udah on Yom Tov, a su'udah on Purim. Do we have an obligation to have a su'udah on Hanukkah? So technically speaking, or strictly speaking, you don't have an obligation. But there are those who say it's still important to do so. It's still important to have a su'udah, have a more of an elaborate su'udah on Hanukkah. And one of the allusions to it is this pasuk over here. Because Yosef's making a su'udah for his brothers, and alluded to in these words is Hanukkah. So it's an allusion to the idea you should have a su'udah on Hanukkah, right? Why is that? What's the significance of that? Yosef's making a su'udah for his brothers, and Hanukkah is there, alluded to in that pasuk. So first of all, just as a backdrop over here, just to appreciate the idea, because obviously we understand Hanukkah took place thousands of years after, hundreds of years after this event. So how can Hanukkah be over here? So this goes to the idea in general that everything is alluded to in the Torah. Whatever happens, the whole Torah is a blueprint for everything which is happening in reality, and especially in Bereishis, right? Maisa Ovis Simulabonim, whatever the patriarchs, the matriarchs did, became like a spiritual root of things which would happen to the Jewish people in the future. That's a classic idea. So it's not surprising that we find Hanukkah alluded to over here, even though it took place hundreds and hundreds of years later, because everything's in the Torah. So everything has to find a place. Everything has to have an origin, some type of root. And over here, we're seeing that Yosef is a root to Hanukkah. That's a fact over here. Yosef is serving as a root to the energy of Hanukkah. That's what's coming out from this. He's making a su'udah for his brothers. Here lies the remez of Hanukkah. So it's pointing to Yosef is somehow a root. He's some type of spiritual root for the idea of Hanukkah. Just as a side, by the way, Hanukkah coincides with the completion of the Mishkan, of the building of the Mishkan in the desert, right? When the Jewish people came out. So they started building the Mishkan on the first, which corresponds to the first day of Sukkot. That's when they first began to build the Mishkan. And the actual construction was finished on the first day of Hanukkah, which corresponded to the first day of Hanukkah. So again, you know, there it's a much easier connection because the completion of the Mishkan and the readiness for the inauguration of the Mishkan already began on Hanukkah. They didn't actually begin the operation of the Mishkan until the first of Nisan, a few months later. But at least the Mishkan was finished. So there, that's a much more obvious connection to Hanukkah, because Hanukkah is obviously the rededication of the Beis Hamikdash and the Beis Hamikdash. So that way also Hanukkah is alluded to over there in this passage. But this piece over here with Yosef being some kind of a spiritual root of Hanukkah, like what is that about? Why is what's the connection between Yosef and Hanukkah? So the source of this idea brought down by different Kabbalistic svarim and different Kabbalistic sources is appreciating what is the midah of Yosef. What does Yosef stand out for? And we discussed this a few weeks ago. What is his hallmark? What is the event in his life which earned him the greatness and the establishing for the Jewish people such a tremendous midah and attribute? It's his midah of kedusha, of sanctity. That's the midah of Yosef, of kedusha, of sanctity. Meaning to say, when I say sanctity, I'm talking about sanctification and separating ourselves and not overindulging ourselves and separating ourselves from the taivas and the desires of this world. That's the midah of Yosef. And where do we see that? Obviously, we see this in the episode when he separated from the temptation of Ashes Potiphar. The wife of Potiphar tried to seduce him, and he refrained. He held himself back. That act was so seminal. It was so seminal, obviously, it then led ultimately to then him being put into jail, and everything else followed after that as well. But the Medrash also says that Yosef yored l'Mitzrayim. Yosef went down to Mitzrayim, v'gada atzma min erva, and he shielded himself from promiscuity. And as a result of that, nigdur Yisrael b'zuchuso, the whole Jewish people earned or had this potential, earned the potential of also being protected in morality and avoiding immorality in his merit. Omer b'chia bar Abba said, "Kedai haya gidur erva ba'atzmo." It was worth it. The self control and the shielding himself of erva, of immorality of Yosef. It was in that merit shenigli Yisrael al yado, the Jewish people redeemed from Egypt. So the whole Gulas Mitzrayim was in the zuchus of the guarding himself, of Yosef guarding himself and avoiding the temptation of Ashes Potiphar. That was the midah of Yosef. Moreover, it's brought down also Sefer Megala Mukas, very classic Kabbalistic source from the 1500s. He says that the gematria of Yosef is the same gematria as Antiochus. As Antiochus. Who's Antiochus? Antiochus was the Greek general. He was the Greek king. And Antiochus is the representative, so to speak, of the Greek culture. Yosef has the same gematria as the word Antiochus. And also has the same gematria as Melech Yavan. The phrase Melech Yavan, the king of Yavan. Also, the gematria is, if you want to check it out, is 156. The gematria of Yosef is 156. Same gematria as Antiochus, same gematria as Melech Yavan. What's that got to do with it? Because what was Yavan? What did Greece represent? Greece represented the idolization, the idolizing of the body, the idolizing of desire, the idolizing of power. They were like the hotbed of promiscuity and immorality. That was the whole nature, the whole klipa, as they say, the klipa of Yavan was a klipa of erva, of immorality and promiscuity. This was their hallmark. This is what they represented. Yosef is the exact antithesis of that. By him bearing the same gematria as Antiochus and Melech Yavan symbolizes the fact that he's the antithesis of what Yavan represented, what Greece represented. Greece represented the idolizing and the indulging of the body in every way whatsoever. And interestingly, is that they also idolize the mind as well as part of the body. It's all about self-serving satisfaction of all aspects of the human experience, whether I'm enjoying physicality or whether I'm enjoying mental and academic analysis. It's all enjoyment. It's all self-serving satisfaction. It's all about idolizing myself, the body and desire. This is Yavan. Yavan is erva. Yavan is pritzus, is immorality. It's just the breakdown of all boundaries and barriers. And Yosef is the exact opposite. He's the exact opposite of breaking down of boundaries. He sets up boundaries. He's magdi himself. He protects himself from the temptation of Ashes Potiphar. And therefore, that's why two of the decrees that the Yavanim, you know, did succeed in doing against the Jewish people. What were two of the decrees were? That they wanted to destroy part of the general mission to destroy the Kedusha, the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, was they would take brides at their wedding day and basically cart them off to a Greek officer to basically, you know, be intimate with her. to destroy the kedusha of the marriage, to destroy the kedusha of the marriage that she was going into. That was one thing. And the other thing that which they tried to abolish, and they succeeded in doing to I guess to a great extent as well, is they tried to abolish bris mila. What is bris mila? Circumcision is that mitzvah which represents, it's the one mitzvah out of all mitzvahs which really stands out as being a symbol of kedusha, of sanctity, that we are controlling ourselves, we're controlling our desires. That was one of their targets, destroy bris mila. Destroy bris mila and destroy the holiness of the marriage. I'm just thinking right now, what is marriage called in Judaism? It's called kedushin. It's not just called marriage, it's called kedushin. Kedushin is holiness. Marriage is holy. Bris mila is holy. They targeted the abolishment of bris mila and the abolishment of the holiness of the Jewish marriage. This was Yavin. Yosef is the antithesis of this. He's the antithesis because he controls himself against any kind of desire with Ashes Potiphar, and he goes down in history as the, so to speak, that kind of the, he's not really a patriarch, he's a quasi-patriarch, the rabbis look at him as. He's a quasi-patriarch of infusing Kedusha into the Klal Yisrael, into the Jewish people, being magda oneself, controlling oneself from desire, and as a result, that's how Chanukah gets its energy from Yosef, because Chanukah is this Yom Tov of Kedusha, of sanctification and fighting against the desires and the temptations of Yavin, and Yosef is the represents that. He is the source of that. He is the source of this tremendous mila of Kedusha, which is what the Jewish people had and gained back with the miracle of Chanukah. But where does Kedusha begin? Where does Kedusha begin? Kedusha begins, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, it says, the eye sees, the heart desires, and the body fulfills the actions, right? It always begins with the eyes. What is Kedusha? Kedusha is curbing yourself, controlling yourself, and not overindulging in all of the delights of the physical things of the world. It begins by the eye. If you don't see something, you have less desire. As soon as the eye sees something which is tempting, it's very, very difficult. You know, last night I was getting ready for bed, and you know, my daughters came back from New York last night. What did they come in with? They walked in with a big box of donuts from one of the bakeries in Brooklyn. I mean, it was very challenging. I mean, these are not, you know, we're not talking about Philadelphia donuts. These are Brooklyn donuts. These are the best with the best jelly inside. I mean, they're not like this size. They're this size, you know, and they've got all this jelly and all this cream and everything. So I'm standing there at the dining room with these delicious donuts. One of my daughters is eating it. What am I supposed to do? I'm not going to tell you the rest of the story, but before they came in, you know, I wasn't thinking about donuts. I wasn't planning to have any donuts, you know, at 9 o'clock at night, right? But the eye sees it, and that's the end, right? The eye sees, the heart desires, and the body fulfills the actions which follow afterwards. But the eye begins. So Kedusha begins with the eyes. It begins with the eyes. So it's not by accident. It's not by accident. It's not by chance. Nothing is by chance. It's not by accident that Yosef, in the brachas which Yaakov gives to the Shvatim before he passes away, the bracha he gives to Yosef, this is in Bereishis Memtes, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Pasuk says, Ben Paras Yosef, Ben Paras Aliyayin. He says, Yosef ben Paras, he's a son of expansion. He's like an expanding, he's a blossoming, like a Paras, a fruitful son is Yosef. Ben Paras Yosef, a fruitful son is Yosef. Ben Paras, a fruitful son. Why? Aleoin, because of the eye. Because of the eye. Because of his eyes. Because he controlled his eyes from following the desires of Ashes Potiphar. And the Gemara says, very interesting halacha, that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, so one of the laws of kachim, of sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash, is sacrifices could only be eaten in the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. That was a rule, kachim, different types of sacrifices. There was a rule, though, in Shiloh, in the Mishkan in Shiloh. In the Mishkan of Shiloh, there was a rule that lighter types of less, the two categories of sacrifices, kachim kalim. There's a lighter form of sacrifices, right? So there's a category of sacrifices which are lighter form, and they can be eaten anywhere inside Yerushalayim. But in Shiloh, you could eat kachim kalim, the lighter sacrifices, in any location that you could see Shiloh from. So even if you weren't in Shiloh when the Mishkan was there, if you could see Shiloh from a distance, from a hill on the other side over there, and you could see Shiloh, you could eat kachim kalim, you could eat these sacrifices over there. What's unique about Shiloh? The answer is because Shiloh was in the portion of Yosef, and the Gemara says because Yosef exemplified himself with his eyes, and he controlled his eyes from looking at all of the desirous women in Mitzrayim. He controlled his eyes. He was rewarded that in his chelek, in his portion, he would have an expansiveness of eye. And anyone, anyway there, any place there that could see Shiloh was allowed to eat kachim, was allowed to eat these sacrifices, unique to Shiloh, unique to the portion of Yosef. The point is that Yosef has this example, he is the paragon of the control of the eyes, and as a result, the kedusha of the spirit, the kedusha of behavior, which follows as a result of that. It's the control of the eyes, not allowing the eyes to go here, there, and everywhere, desiring everything which it sees. Once you see it, you begin to desire it. Controlling your eyes to look only at holy things. That was Yosef. That was the madrega of Yosef. Using his eyes only to look at holy things and not diverting its attention to other things which are mundane, which are unholy. That was the mile of Yosef. And that's where he got his kedusha from. And that's where Klal Yisrael got that kedusha from. We redeemed from Mitzrayim in the zechus of Yosef because of his kedusha, because of his eyes. And the miracle of Hanukkah was the overpowering of that nation, which represented the exact opposite of kedusha, which is Yavin. And as a result of that, we have another mitzvah on Hanukkah, or a mitzvah on Hanukkah, which again reminds us of our eyes. What is that? The Ner Hanukkah. So aside from the Ner Hanukkah being commemorating the miracle of the oil lasting for a total of 8 days altogether, but there's a whole other dimension of the Ner Hanukkah. The Ner Hanukkah is the light. It's the light of, when we look at the Ner Hanukkah, we're not just thinking about the miracles. We're not just thinking about the gratitude we have for Hashem. But the Ner Hanukkah represents, because Ner Hanukkah comes, where does the whole Kedusha of the Yom Tov come from? It comes from Yosef. It comes from Yosef, who used his eyes to look at holy things. So when you're looking at the Ner Hanukkah, we are reminded of Yosef, that he also only looked at holy things. But the Ner Hanukkah itself, why is it so holy? What makes it this physically holy? I saw in a sefer this morning, Aaron Leib Steimer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he says that out of all of the miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, there were many miracles in the Beis HaMikdash, there were 10 miracles altogether. But the miracle which the Gemara describes as being something which really represents the Shekhinah being among us is the miracle of the Ner Ma'arave, the constant light on the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Let me explain. The miracle of Hanukkah is a one-time miracle. Not many people realize this, but a similar kind of miracle happened every single day in the Beis HaMikdash. The Ner Ma'arave, the western light on the menorah, every day had a miracle of the oil lasting for the entire day, right? That's why it was so special. That Ner Ma'arave lasted the entire day. So we celebrate the Ner Hanukkah because of the fact there was no oil at all found, and they found this crucible of oil, and that becomes the miracle of Hanukkah. But on a daily basis, the daily lamp, the Ner Ma'arave, was lit the entire day and stayed lit the entire day as a miracle. And that was one of the miracles which happened on a daily basis inside the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says that miracle was representative of the Shekhinah being among us. That miracle was representative of the Shekhinah being among us. He asks, why not the other miracles? There were 9 other miracles in the Beis HaMikdash. Why weren't those miracles representative of the Shekhinah being among us? The answer is because the miracle of the Ner, the miracle of the flame, is the following. Because what is a flame? A flame is something, you can't pick up a flame, you can't touch it, it's dangerous to touch it. But the flame is a physical phenomena. All physical phenomena have their roots in spiritual energy. All physical things have their roots in spiritual energy. But most objects, all objects for that matter, all objects, you can't really touch, you can't see, there's no sense of the spirituality of the thing. I've got a cup over here, I can't see the spirituality in this, right? It's so coarse, it's physical, it's solid. A flame, though, because you can't touch it, because it has no tangibility to it, that reflects much more, obviously, the spiritual energy behind it. There's much more of a presence of a spirituality in the physical flame itself because of the inability to be able to touch it, to be able to hold it, to be able to contain it. It's much more ethereal. It dances around. It has intrinsically almost like a presence of the spiritual energy. And therefore, what is that spiritual energy? It's the Shekhinah. It's the divine presence. So a flame in particular has much more of a connection to Ruchnius than any other physical object. So the miracle of the Ner Maravi is something which really demonstrates the Shekhinah being there. And back to Ner Chanukah, the Ner Chanukah, because of the flame and the energy, the spirituality behind that flame, there's no question this is, we're looking at the divine presence when we're looking at the Ner Chanukah. We're looking at that, the Ner Chanukah, we are looking at the Shekhinah, and we are directing our eyes upon holiness in the Zuchus of Yosef, who also directed his eyes only upon Kedusha. And that's what he invested in and injected into the spiritual genes of us, of the Jewish people, the ability to focus exclusively upon things of Kedusha, to meditate upon that flame, to look at the flame as it's dancing around, to meditate upon the fact this is the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is, so to speak, in the flames themselves. And that's what our eyes, we should be connecting our eyes only to the Shekhinah, to the Ner Chanukah. And there's an extension of that, to become more filled with Kedusha, to direct our lives towards more of a holy pursuit and not be drawn in this direction, that direction, after all the different physical desires, which is what the Greeks wanted to do. As long as we are drawn after the physical desires and the self-indulgence and the desires, then we are doing what the Greeks wanted to do. Well, then they're succeeding. But as long as we can be like Yosef and focus our eyes exclusively upon Kedusha, so therefore we are being the opposite of that and we are vanquishing the philosophy of the Greeks. So therefore this could be another explanation as to why there's a bracha upon seeing the Ner Chanukah, even if you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of lighting the Ner Chanukah, because looking at it itself is exactly what it's all about. It's exactly what Chanukah is all about. It's about looking at Kedusha and becoming more Kaddish. And also why the Onein as well. The Onein has to light the menorah despite the fact he's not doing the mitzvah himself, lighting it for himself, but he's doing it for the sake of creating light, creating the possibility that everybody should see the Ner Chanukah. So that's the message over here. That's the connection to the parasha, right? Yosef is the origin. He's the source. His Kedusha and his directing his sight only for holy matters is the energy and the root of the Ner Chanukah. And we should also follow on suit to only look at the Ner Chanukah, look at it, meditate on it, and focus only on holy things and bring Kedusha, much more Kedusha into our lives. So may we all merit to have that and be Zocha to Kedusha, Kedusha, Kedusha.